Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey everyone, and welcome to Come for Supper. I'm Alexandra Dudley, food writer, cook, and serial dinner party host. So I thought it'd be fun to sit down with people who share that love for food, chat about life, and learn a little bit more about how they like to serve supper. I speak to chefs, restaurateurs, artists, actors, authors, and pretty much anyone who likes to entertain. If you're new to the podcast, make sure you click subscribe. And if you enjoy it, rate it, review it, share it, and tell your friends, as it makes all the difference. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy the show. My guest today is someone whose work within hospitality has been paramount in the success stories of many of our favourite chefs and restaurants. Having started her career in music, she carved a livelihood in food and lifestyle PR, which culminated in her setting up her very own agency, Gerber Communications. This year, Gerber celebrated their 10th birthday and a decade of success stories, working with the likes of Skye Gingell, Thomasina Myers, Caravan and JKS Restaurants. Welcome to the studio, Tanya Lazel Payne.
Hi, Alex. Thanks so much for having me.
Welcome. So where have you come from this afternoon?
Just from the office, actually, which is it's quite a treat to have an afternoon or in fact, a whole day without meetings to actually get some work done.
Oh, nice. Yeah, rare in that industry, in your industry.
Yeah.
I can imagine.
Yeah. That's the sort of the wonderful thing, I guess, about what we do is that there's never a dull moment.
Definitely not.
You know, it's easy to complain about being sort of thrown from meeting to meeting, but actually that's kind of the fun of it.
So congratulations on 10 years.
Thank you.
What a serious milestone. So let's go back to the very beginning. I know that you worked in the music industry, which is like very cool. So how did that happen and where were you kind of in life at that point? How did you get there?
So basically, when I left university, I wanted to go backpacking around South America.
Yeah.
And
Unique.
And my mother was like, no, you're not. And I was like, yes, I am. So we had probably the biggest argument we've ever had to date. And then a girlfriend of mine was going to New York on an internship program where you get placed at various businesses. And my mother was like, right, that's what you're doing. You're going to go get a proper job. And I actually did not want to go to New York, age 21. Can you imagine? Most 21-year-olds would
jump to
give,
that.
Yeah, all of their limbs to go. So I cut a deal with her and I said, okay, I'll go for 3 months, but if I don't like it, I'm coming back. Anyway, I got placed at British Airways randomly in the finance department in Queens, which, you know, considering I'm like absolutely terrible at maths, was kind of a joke. And while I was in New York having the most amazing time, I mean, that was the thing, you know, within a week, of course, I was having the best time and didn't want to get back to London. A friend of mine who worked at London Records in the UK came over and we had dinner and he was like, what are you doing in New York? And I was like, having a great time. And he was like, why don't you come and work at London Records? And I was like, okay.
Cool.
So then I went through this process of kind of visas and green cards and the company very kindly sponsored me. Anyway, so I started working at London Records and I stayed there for 8 years.
Wow, gosh, I didn't realise it was that long. That's a long time.
Yeah. And it was so amazing.
And because you work with All Saints, so cool. Such of the time.
I know. Well, London Records had the best, you know, the best artists, Pet Shop Boys.
Cool.
You know, FFRR, which was the dance label. So we worked with Pete Tong.
Cool.
Paul Oakenfold. I mean, yeah, it's a great artist.
So what were you? What was your role there?
So I started out as the A&R assistant.
Oh, that's fun. So you kind of scouting new talent and stuff.
Well, I was kind of gigs. I was doing the admin side of it when I first started. But yeah, and then I was going to the gigs, and then and while I was there, people kept saying to me, "Oh, you should be in PR," and I was just like, "Do I really want to talk to journalists, like nerdy journalists, about, you know, obscure records from like the, you know, time that I've never heard of?" And And I thought, well, do you know what? Now's probably a good time to do it, you know, because I know everyone here. So I went to the president of the company and I said, can I go into the PR department? And he said, well, go and talk to the head of publicity. So I did. And she said, well, actually, we're looking for a junior publicist. So here you go. And she gave me a record by a band called Shaq, who are from Liverpool.
Okay.
You won't have heard of them, I'm sure. And gave me a list of journalists. And I just got on the phone and started talking to them, and I just loved it. I just loved it so much.
Gosh.
So
cold calling, difficult.
Yeah, totally cold calling.
Although
totally
a lot
cold
of
calling.
Stuff that we do is actually, I'll cold approach. I prefer cold approaching people, like walking up to people. But cold calling, I just get so nervy about.
Yeah, but I think the British accent worked.
Yes,
wonders.
Charming.
Yeah,
charming. Really charming.
They just, you know, the New Yorkers loved it. Anyway, so that was my sort of my entry point into the world of PR, yeah. And I just loved it. So I did that for, I guess, 4 years, and then basically the company got bought by Warner Brothers, and September 11th happened, and then I basically decided that I couldn't leave New York in its hour of need. Then I got over that, came back to London, and at the time Napster had happened.
Yeah,
so the whole music business
changed.
Yeah, and I thought, gosh, I'm not quite sure what I'm going to do. And a friend of mine rang me up who ran an entertainment agency in London called Neil Redding, and he said, what are you doing at the moment? I was like, oh, I'm not really sure. And he was like, look, I need your help for a couple of weeks on a project. And I was like, look, I said, you know, we've talked about working together. You know, we're friends. We, you know, probably won't work. Best not to. He said, look, I just need your help for 2 weeks. And I was like, okay, yeah, okay, 2 weeks, fine. Kind of interesting to see how a PR company in London works. So I'd been in America for 7 years, 8 years. And so I started for 2 weeks and ended up heading up the lifestyle division there and stayed for 4 years.
So was that all-encompassing? Was it food, fashion? I mean, what does lifestyle mean these days? Everyone's a lifestyle person. But what were you looking after?
So I think my first client was a private members club called 50 on St. James's.
Okay. Is it still there?
It's not there.
Okay.
And then a nightclub called Movida.
Okay.
but then I started working with Marco Pierre White.
Yeah.
Who
that's amazing.
Which
at
was
his
amazing.
Prime.
He was at the time we launched a restaurant called Luciano on St. James's. He was an inspiration to work with. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was like, you know, he was brilliant, and he was, yeah, I mean, I learned a lot working with him. Mm-hmm. I had some sort of interesting moments where, you know, we were setting up photo shoots, and I remember we were doing the cover of ES magazine one time, and the stylist said to me, right, okay, what does he want to wear? You know, like, I'll bring, you know, a selection of this, that, and Marco's like, no, I'm not wearing anybody else's clothes. So I told this to the stylist, and they were like, okay, fine, he needs to come in pressed chinos and a nice shirt.
Yeah, right, definitely not.
Yeah. Anyway, needless to say, he came in creased trousers and just absolutely not dressed for a cover of a magazine, and he wasn't prepared to wear anyone else's clothes. I mean, so situations like that where it's just like, you know, you just got to roll with it. Anyway, needless to say, he didn't get the cover, but... Yeah.
Really? They didn't put him on the cover because of that?
Yeah. I mean, he had...
I feel like if that happened now, they'd love that. That would be the story, surely. Mm. That's what they would do, no? I feel we love a bit of rebellion at the moment, especially ES, no? I think.
Not on the cover.
Oh, okay.
I mean, you've got to
when I get a cover shot.
Exactly.
Don't turn up in creased trousers.
I know, and shirt. You know, I mean, at least you need to have ironed clothes.
Yeah, okay.
So anyway,
were you into food at that time? When you were in New York, were you into food? Was it something that was always there?
Yeah. So I mean, I guess like from an early age, I've always loved food because my mum was a great cook, and food was very much part of my life growing up. So I've always been quite greedy and just love food so much. But it wasn't until I got to New York when I had a boyfriend who was really good friends with a lot of the famous chefs. So we used to go to a lot of their restaurants. Yeah, exactly. And that's when I started to get a better understanding of how restaurants actually work, mm-hmm. and sort of get an understanding of what happens in the kitchens and the kind of hierarchy of the, you know, chefs and, you know, what a KP does and all that kind of stuff. And I was fascinated by it. I was fascinated by just the business of it and the theatre of it, I think.
Yeah, that's
mostly.
Such a good word, the theatre of it, I think.
You know?
It was just a real performance, isn't it?
And even now, that's what I love.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter if you're going to a sandwich shop or you're going to the Ritz, like, it's exciting.
Yeah.
You know? So that's what I think what really started, kind of ignited my interest in the business of restaurants. And then, so then I came back. In many ways, it was a natural progression for me, mm-hmm. because I was a bit older. I was, you know, 30 at that point. So I was a little bit too old to be hanging out in nightclubs until 4 a.m.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think some 30-year-olds would argue, but I know what you mean.
So dining out and drinking wine with friends and stuff was kind of more my speed at the time.
Level.
Yeah, exactly. So,
how long were you at Neil Redding?
4 years.
Okay, and then so what? Because it's quite a big jump to then just go and set your own thing up. You were clearly itching for it for a long time. But
so,
what was that?
Well,
moment?
Actually, I wasn't. This is where this is the moment for my husband. He always blames me for not giving him credit for this, but okay. Basically, it's his fault. He just said, you know, if you're going to work this hard, you know, why don't you, you know,
do
your own thing?
Yeah.
You know, you've been doing it. You know, for a long time, give it a go. Because and also he's an entrepreneur.
Mm-hmm.
He's got his own business,
yeah.
which has been running for 16 years now. Anyway, I was just like, no way, no way, no way, no way. And for a year, he pestered me. And then I just thought, well, I'll give it a go. And so I did. And I started from my kitchen table with my laptop.
Most great businesses start there.
Well, I mean, where else do they start?
Yeah,
right?
Coffee shops, Starbucks. Starbucks can probably.
Well,
have
yeah,
probably,
there was a few of those moments too.
Know,
but I mean, you
we
know,
didn't have trendy coffee shops back then.
No, exactly. It's true, actually.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think very few businesses start with like an actual office.
Yeah, that's so true.
So it was just me, my laptop, and the kitchen table, and I just really didn't quite know. I mean, I was saying the other night, I didn't imagine that I would still be here 10 years in with, you know, an amazing team and working.
Yeah, how big
really
is the team now?
So there's 15 of us.
Great, nice.
And we've got a design team as well, and.
Mm-hmm.
And a cool office, and we've got quick lunch. So yeah, it's really, I mean, it's exciting. So that's how I got into it.
So let's take it a little bit to the dinner table.
Okay.
Do you like to entertain?
I do.
You do.
I love cooking full stop.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's kind of what I choose to do in my spare time. I particularly love cooking for the family. When it comes to entertaining, I keep it super, super simple.
Yeah.
Just because one thing I'm not good at is the timing of it. I probably need to get your
all
book,
in the prep.
Actually,
it's all in the prep.
I know. I need to get your book. So generally, what we do is kind of have a formula. So my husband does the meat, or you know,
yeah, cool.
Usually like you know, on
it's
the
good
on
to have roles in these situations.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah,
avoid all the arguments.
Yeah, exactly. And he'll do something on the big green egg or something, and then I'll do the salads and the sides and everything else.
Nice. Cocktails, pudding, like, are you into that kind of thing?
So, no, we don't do cocktails at home.
Okay.
No, but we
too that, many of those for at work, I can imagine.
I don't know. Actually, I think we're probably just a bit. We just haven't got round to it. Actually, we're not massive cocktail drinkers, you know, at home. But yeah, unless it's a champagne cocktail.
Champagne
cocktails,
that's nice.
Yeah. And I'm not really a pudding person. Although I was, I invited Skye Gingell round for Sunday lunch.
Mm-hmm.
Once, and it was one of those things, you know, as you sort of, you ask, you know, in the moment, and I love Skye, and we've worked mm-hmm. together for a very, very long time, and she's become a good friend, and it's a couple of years ago, and I was like, why don't you come around for Sunday lunch? Anyway, and then I said to my husband, you know, Skye's coming over for Sunday lunch. He was like, are you insane? Well, I mean, what on earth are you going to cook? And I was like, yeah, I haven't quite thought about that. And then I got into a complete panic about the whole thing. And then, of course, I thought, well, you know, best thing to do is to keep it simple.
Mm-hmm.
So we did the kind of, you know, the sort of, did I don't know, I think a lamb and some salads. And one of the salads I'm definitely going to do, it's, I know, I've done a million times, know it inside out, is the peppers Piemontese.
Nice, delicious.
Yeah. Anyway, did it. They came out beautifully. Anyway, as Skye walked in, I thought, oh my God, this is actually her recipe.
But oh, because that's so funny.
Because it's from, she's, it's in one of her...
You've just been doing
her...
it for so... But then I guess it's so many people's recipes. I
know.
It's also just a classic recipe.
I know, but still.
And she's inevitably going to have a recipe for everything. You know, she'll have her own version of everything, right? So this is just your version.
Mm.
Was it good? Did she enjoy it?
She, of course, she. I mean, she's, you know, she's just such a delight. She was, you know, she was, she's so, yeah. you know, so sweet. She was. She said, of course, it tasted delicious, which I'm sure it didn't taste nearly as delicious as hers, but she ate it, so.
And what about kitchen catastrophes?
I guess that's probably, that's, you know, sort
that's
of...
That's the one.
Yeah, that's the one. There was another funny incident where a very well-known food writer... asked me to bake a cake for an occasion, mm-hmm. And she needed some help. I won't say who it is, but anyway. And so, you know, when you're asked for, you know, to give help, you want to help. So I was like, yeah, let me know what you need. She said, well, are you any good at baking? And actually, I've only recently got into baking because of my daughter. It's not mm-hmm. something that, you know, I much prefer to do all the other bits. And I said, well, actually, I'm not the greatest. She said, no, well, don't worry. And I said, let me know what you need.
Yeah,
let me
okay.
know what you need. And she's like, well, I'd love you to make a Victoria sponge cake.
Okay, simple enough.
Never made one before.
Okay.
Obviously, I didn't say that. And she was like, the thing is, though, and I said, yeah, no problem. She said, but you have to make it. You can't buy it. And I was like, yeah, no problem. No problem. Yep, done. Consider it done. It's just like... Anyway, I had to rope a couple of the girls from the office in to come round to my flat to help me make it, because I was just like, if, you know, and especially for this person,
it has to be perfect.
So, yeah, anyway, it turned out great.
Okay, good. Mary Berry has a great Victoria sponge recipe.
Trust me, I know how to make a Victoria sponge now.
Now, I'm a big believer that the best things in life, best recipes, best people, even like best jumpers, are all things that come with a story. And I know that storytelling has been a big part of the success of Gerber. And it made me think of this quote that J.K. Rowling said, particularly in reference to what seems like this kind of ever-turning carousel of restaurant openings and closings, which is that there's always room for a story that can transport people to another place. And when I was trying to find this exact wording, because I don't know off the top of my head, I found this other quote, who shamefully I forgot to write his name down, but he's a professor, so we can definitely trust him. And he said, storytelling is the most powerful way to put ideas out into the world. Which leads me on to my next question, which is, why is a good story so important when you're, you know, PRing anything?
I think that humans have responded to storytelling since the beginning of time. That's, you know, we know that as a fact. And when it comes to selling something, which is essentially what PR mm-hmm. is, you have to think about what is going to, how you're going to connect with, you know, Joe Bloggs on the street.
Yeah.
And, you know, yes, of course, there's a place for just, you know, news bites on this restaurant's opening, whatever. But essentially, if you're going to deliver a campaign that's got any kind of longevity, you've got to engage your audience. And the best way to do that is by telling a story that's interesting. And what makes a good story? It's a story that is authentic. And I know people, you know, use that word very loosely,
right, yeah.
but that's coming, you know, first of all, you know, it's always good if you can get the right person to tell the story.
Mm.
And that right person can be anyone. So in the world of restaurants and what we do, it doesn't have to be the celebrity chef, because, I mean, it's not even a thing anymore. It doesn't have to be the chef. It can be, you know, it can be the sommelier. It can be, it could be the owner of the restaurant. It might be the chef. It could, you know, it might be the maitre d'. It's whoever has the passion and the knowledge to tell that story, because I think now more and more people want to learn more from their dining experiences as well.
And I think provenance and everything, and that, because that's all storytelling as
exactly.
well. People really care about that.
Exactly. And, you know, I think people love to go to their friends' houses on a Friday night to a dinner party and tell them about this new ingredient that they tried at, you know, this hot new Middle Eastern vegetarian restaurant on Commercial Road.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not going to use this to plug my restaurants, but no, but, you know, like people are excited by that, by learning about new ingredients and new styles of cuisine. And that's the other thing about food, is that food just food tells such great stories. Mm. Whether you know, it's so interlinked with travel.
Yeah.
So you can learn about, you know, geography, countries, you know, through and history as well.
Yeah, definitely history. That's why I think it's a language as well, isn't it? Food. It's this kind of universal language. And actually, you're right. It is storytelling, especially when they're recipes that come down from, you know, family members or
exactly.
of different areas, or kind of amid, like, you know, I'm thinking about Ben Tish and the kind of food that he's doing, the Morris kind of influence food.
Yeah.
And there's so much history and kind of culture ingrained in everything in there. And I think you remember the good things with a good story are things that you remember as well.
Totally.
So what about your stories then? What have been your kind of best eating experiences or dinner parties or restaurants, anything?
Yeah. So, I mean, I have to, my favourite dining experience in London, I think, is probably Kitchen Table. Have you been?
No, I haven't.
Really?
I need to go. No, I really haven't. Okay.
So it's James Nappet and Sandhya Chang's restaurant. It's behind Bubble Dogs. Mm-hmm. So you go through a velvet curtain and it's a horseshoe bar that seats 19 people. And there's James Nappet and his team cooking right in front of you. But what's really great about it, and this is what I love, it's just really taps into, I guess, how I want to eat and how a lot of people want to eat these days, having some multiple taste sensations. So you come in and you don't get a menu. There's a chalkboard on the wall, and it has literally a list of ingredients. So it might say oyster, pork, chicken, And that's it. But that's just an indication of what the
ordering of the food you're getting,
what's going to be in that dish. So I think it's like between some like 10 and 12 courses.
So
which
great.
I mean, that, you know, I often I sort of shy away from tasting menus these days. But so you don't really know quite what you're getting. But so that's kind of part of the excitement. But the food is better than, you know, most.
What's the
from
price
point? Dining, it's expensive.
Okay. But it's how expensive? Because actually some tasting menus, you know, some are kind of £100 and some are like £500.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, if you're doing, including the wine and everything, you could probably, I don't know, it's about £200 a head.
The wine ramps it up.
Yeah, exactly.
Well. But then it's sad. You know, it's sad to go
I know,
and have
it. I know. And Sandy is so great. So she's, you know, so you don't want to miss out on the
wine.
Probably
miss
without,
it,
without the wine, it's probably like 120 something.
Okay, so you could maybe do it. Or save it for birthday. Okay.
It's definitely it's but that's the thing. It's like what's the ultimate dining experience? You know, it's like, I mean, actually, you know, you don't go there every week. I mean, you know.
It's like Christmas. You can't have Christmas every year.
Yeah.
Every year, every day.
Yeah. So yeah, so that's the ultimate. That's the kind of, you know, I think that as far as kind of dining experiences in London go, that's pretty it's up there.
Spectacular.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and I think, I mean, there's personally, you know, there's I mean, I love just, a great Italian, you know, just going like places like Padella.
Simple, so good.
Simple
so good.
But delicious.
And then on the other side of the spectrum, you've got the Gloria and, you know, the kind of extravaganza brilliance, which I feel like London was crying out for that kind of
my
restaurant.
Gosh, I know.
It was so the opposite of kind of stripped back and minimal. And
totally.
It's so extra.
Totally.
And the food is fine. It's consistent. It's fine. But it's the whole experience, I think, that makes it really exciting. Someone the other day said to me that they've been on loads of dates recently, and every time they go, they go on a date. They go there because it's just there's so much going on.
Yeah.
That you're kind of forced to be part of the experience because it kind of swallows you.
Yeah.
And everything from the kind of like ridiculously huge ice creams and that lemon meringue pie, and it's just like brilliant and kind of gigantic.
But no, you're right. I think that was I think the timing was perfect for them because you know, I think just everyone in London was ready for some fun.
Yeah.
And as you say, it you know, if you compare Gloria to all the other Italian restaurants in London that we love, it couldn't have been more different. But that was the selling point.
Yeah,
right?
And it works. It also works. It's because it's good. And the ingredients are so good. So,
yeah.
You know, the burrata is good because it's so good.
Yeah.
You know, you'd have to, I mean, they put pesto in it and stuff, which is great. The pesto heart. Oh, that in Ciccolo.
In Ciccolo.
Yeah, in Ciccolo.
Yeah.
That. But I mean, you know, the ingredients are good. And I think that speaks for itself as well.
Yeah, but I think also, One of the reasons for their success is the fact that it's fun, and I think that people more and more are looking for more from their dining experience. Mm. It's not just about the food.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not saying that every single restaurant needs to have, you know, sort of drag queens jumping out of birthday cakes, because that's obviously not right for everyone. But, you know, whatever you can do to just add a little bit of...
sparkle.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Is going to, you're going to be winning if you can do that, I think.
So what are your top three restaurants in London at the moment? Because you are, you know, expert.
Oh, my gosh.
You can say some of yours as well. You're allowed to. Because we were talking about Bubbler earlier, which... how do you say it?
Bubbler. Which...
it's just great. You can say it anyway. I think it'd be like Bubbler. It sounds great. But it's fantastic. It's kind of Middle Eastern. Also, it's purely vegetarian.
Do you know what it means? Bubbler.
Doesn't it mean, like... comfort. It's a
Yiddish term of endearment. It's what a lot of Jewish grandparents call their grandchildren.
Oh, so kind of like darling. Oh, yeah, I think I did read that because I was writing about it.
Which makes
me
love it even more.
It's,
I mean, yeah,
so good.
Bubbler's just
vibrant, colourful.
So great. So great. And it's, it happens to be vegetarian.
Accidentally vegetarian. Exactly.
Yeah.
And a lot of it, you can veganify it for the part. It's just great. It's a great place to take.
Yeah.
Everyone, although it is sharing plates, and I said to someone, I was like, it's definitely sharing plates you don't want to share, but you do, because they are, but they're so good. It's so good. It's Moorish.
Yeah.
Okay,
best
so
hummus in London.
That
yeah.
definitely has to be up there. And aubergine and halloumi. I mean,
everything.
Just go on.
Yeah.
Where else?
I think that, I mean, Gymkhana, which is currently closed at the moment because unfortunately they had a fire, is definitely one of my all-time favourites in London. Have you been?
I've been once.
Yeah. If you want...
again, very
food,
special.
That's where you go. Yeah. And it's the kind of... I always think, you know, if you go and have a dining experience and then you find yourself thinking about it over and over again...
exactly. Then.
That's a good sign. You know, you just always do go back to the classics. You know, I know St. John have also recently celebrated their 25th anniversary, but I was there.
It's incredible, that, isn't it?
I popped in for lunch and it's just like, yeah.
So good.
It just never fails to disappoint.
No, it's,
you know,
so good.
Bone
so
marrow like, salad, bone marrow and parsley salad.
Unapologetic cooking, I think, brilliant. So we're coming to the end, and I always like to ask these kind of last questions. What three ingredients do you always like to have in the kitchen?
Yeah, okay. So, I mean, for me, absolutely number one is chicken stock.
Okay.
I'm a bit of a...
like homemade chicken stock?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
I'm a bit of a nut when it comes to chicken stock, like so much so that I've been known, I mean, on many occasions to go to people's house for, you know, a Sunday roast, and then I see them about to throw the carcass
and
in the bin,
it home.
And I'm literally, yeah.
I love that, yeah. Why not?
You know, how can you do that? It's like...
that's good. It's also very zero waste. Great.
Well, you just can't beat homemade...
no, you really can't.
...chicken stock, which you just use for so many things. You know, I have like my entire... half of my freezer is filled with chicken stock.
That's so great.
So, yeah. And I'm always just, you know, trying to perfect my technique. In fact, it was Sky's recipe recently that turned me on to browning the bones before.
Oh wow! So it's got kind of
just
nuttier,
a light, richer. just a bit more caramelised and slightly sweeter. Yeah, richer.
Yum.
Flavor. Anyway, so chicken stock always. Chilies. But, and that's the other thing, I guess through working with Thomasina Myers actually really opened my eyes up to the world of chilies.
There's so many. She's like a chili dictionary as well. She could reel off a whole load of chilies.
Totally. I mean, I learned so much just about, I mean, all the different flavours that each of the chilies bring, and also the huge difference between using fresh and dried.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's just a whole different thing. And I think, I guess, you know, the Brits have a kind of love of heat, don't they, actually? I mean, I think, you know,
curry,
with Indian curries, Asian and everything. So, but I still think that a lot of people don't really know the full sort of understand the full value that chilies can bring to a mm-hmm. meal, because I think people still think, well, it's just about heat, but actually it's about depth of flavour. And that's what the dried chilies, I think, can really do, mm-hmm. really add to a meal.
She showed me that tip as well, where you kind of dry fry the dry chilies just in a hot pan before you use them, whenever I use chilies or make a salsa, I sort of channel my inner Thomasina Myers. dry pan fry them.
Yeah.
Chilies. That's a good one. I like that.
Yeah.
Also, you've kind of cheated, because you could have like 20 different kinds of chilies in that chilies.
Yeah. No, totally. And then the third is, I know it's, you know, everybody's probably said the same thing, but olive oil.
Good olive oil. Yeah.
Just, and you know, I think the thing about with olive oil is there are so many amazing ones out there, mm. and that, so that's what I try to just. You know, I don't have like one that I stick to, although I have been
just
using this Arbequina Spanish. Yeah. Like there's this great place in Neil's Yard, a Sicilian place. I can't remember what it's called now.
Restaurant.
Casanova. No, it's like it sells Sicilian.
Shop. Okay.
Yeah. Produce, all sorts of delicious things, and they have a whole selection of olive oils, and you can go and just like taste them all with a teaspoon, and then
so fun.
Yeah. But yeah, a good olive oil can really make or break a dish, salad. Yeah.
Good ingredients.
Yeah.
So I wanted to ask you about women and food, because I think it's a great time for women and food, and it's a great time for women being really kind of like leaders and at the forefront, and I guess kind of at the front page is kind of the way to say it. And you're clearly a great leader yourself. So I wanted to ask, which women inspire you?
Wow.
And they don't have to be just in food. Actually, they can be anywhere. They can be anyone.
I mean, I have to say, working with some, you know, my female clients like Tommy Myers, who I actually met when we were both pregnant at the same time. And and she's gone on to have two more children since. And I'm just like, I don't even know how she's done that. Plus write, however many books she's done and opened several restaurants. She's an inspiration. You know, when I think that I've got too much on my plate, I think of her and then I feel better. and she just, you know, she does it all with just, you know,
grace.
Just grace and a massive smile on her face. And same with Laura Harper Hinton from Caravan. She's one of the founders. Similar. She's so talented. She's behind the design of all the Caravan restaurants, and she's obsessive in a brilliant way. So she'll always have a tape measure in her bag. Whether they're about to open a restaurant or not, she'll be measuring the height of, you know, seats, tables and chairs, and you know what's the ultimate height for a, you know, sofa if you're going to have one, or banquette seating, and like in the Caravan in King's Cross, they upholstered all of the banquette seating with disused army blankets.
Oh, nice! I did not know that.
How
so
clever
cool.
is that? Yeah, but that's Laura.
It's cool, that Caravan, isn't it? It's just kind of like, I think it's definitely approaching on its kind of iconic status up there, because you know that whole area has changed so much, but. It's been there for a while.
Yeah.
I remember the first time I went there, actually. It was so amazing. I had such an amazing meal. I still remember it.
To the Exmouth Market one?
No, to the King's Cross one.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. Anyway, so she's, you know, I guess working so closely with the likes of Tommy and Laura and Skye, you know, you see how much they achieve from nothing. You know, I mean, you know, just seeing like a restaurant from a shell turn into something really just spectacular to me is inspiring, and whilst they're juggling family life and all the rest of it, and they always look fabulous as well.
You look fabulous as well, I have to say. You look fabulous.
You're very kind.
And if you could have, last question, if you could have anyone in the world, your ultimate dinner party, they can be alive, dead, they can be fictional, who would you have and why?
Okay, so from the foodie world, I think it has to be Alice Waters.
Cool.
What she's done for food is just, you know, incomparable. Pioneering seasonality, farm-to-table cooking. You know, farm-to-table has informed how we eat
and how
now.
We should eat.
Should eat, and how restaurants try, you know. And I think there are so many chefs globally who have either worked with her or not, who are inspired by her, who reference her all the time. And I think what she's done with Edible Schoolyard is incredible. I mean, I have a child, so, you know, this sort of stuff means more when you have a kid, but the fact that she is doing that is amazing, and I think it's something that should be part of the curriculum globally. Mm-hmm. You know, the more you can bring children close to food and get them to understand how it's grown, how it's farmed. Yeah. And actually, if they understand that, it'll solve a whole lot of problems, you know.
I think we're already seeing that, though, with the younger generation. I mean, they're being forced to kind of be aware, rather than take note, but people, they're so much more aware. Everyone's so much more aware.
Yeah. I mean, I mean, with my daughter's school, when she started, I was absolutely horrified to see that there was still, like, you know, sticky toffee pudding and chocolate cake for pudding every single day. I mean, don't get me wrong, my daughter gets treats. Not like she's never allowed to have sugar, but, like, a massive pudding after, you know, after lunch every day. So I kicked up a huge fuss, and then they changed the menu.
Oh, wow.
So now they have treat pudding on Friday, and every other day of the week it's fruit or something, you know, healthy.
Okay.
So I'm quite proud of that.
Well done.
But yeah, I just think, you know, and I, you know, Jamie Oliver's brilliant for that too. Anyway, so she is... she's amazing in my eyes. Second would be Mick Jagger,
cool.
Who I think, you know, I think what the Rolling Stones did for music was groundbreaking, you know, and they broke the mold. And I'm always fascinated by
people
innovators.
Yeah.
And I think he's obviously really smart and...
still incredible.
What a dude.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, and
so
just
cool.
Would be so fun and charming to have. And then thirdly, I think I'd have Joanna Lumley.
Cool. She'd be hilarious. God, she'd be such a great dinner.
So fun. I mean, I think I slightly fell in love with her when she did Absolutely Fabulous.
Yeah.
And she's just still so fun and just always makes me laugh. And if I can be half as fabulous as her when I'm in my 70s,
that's what I always think of. Yeah, exactly. I want to grow up. Like her meet Stevie Nicks is kind of what I want to channel
when
I'm older, semi-ethereal.
Totally.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much for that. That was fantastic. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. If you liked it, rate it, review it, talk about it, share it, and invite your friends round for supper. This has been a Studio 71 production. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next week.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.